Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
The laundry's going, so it's a Friday morning here.
Friday morning laundry.
Laundry going, trash trucks going outside.
Well, they're doing construction on the street next to mine, so
nice.
I don't know if that's loud enough to bleed over, but you get that's a thing they've been doing for several weeks. We're woken up every morning around 7 a.m. exactly, pretty much. That's like they're dragging something. I think it's that they've put down like the steel plates on the streets, and they're dragging them off so they can get back to it. It's just like...
Yeah, it's good stuff. Yes. Good stuff. Yeah, we've had a big road project here, too. That included several nights of night paving.
Oh, no.
People were unhappy. But it's, what you got to do? You got to drive on the streets. So we're a week out from WWDC, which is good. I have been, I play with the betas a little bit. I don't know if I have. I'm still trying to get my impressions of them and let it sink in a little bit and figure all right more when we get to public beta time. The stage manager stuff.
I've got iPadOS 16 developer beta running, so some stage manager. I've managed some stages, as they
feels,
say.
That feels, that feels like a work in progress to
it
me.
It does, sure does. I found, and some of these are just bugs or maybe things they haven't quite figured out yet. My favorite example of which was I had a stage, if we're going to call it that, with Slack open, and I had full screened Slack, a thing you can do. And I tapped a link in Slack to open it, and it opened. Safari was also in the same stage, but now that Slack was full screened, the Safari window was there, but behind the full screen Slack window, and it opened the link in that window, but gave me no indication that it had opened a link because I tapped it, and it's like, yeah, load that link in the background, but it doesn't tell you because it's in the background. And I was like, where did this link go? I swear, is this broken or whatever? And then I, at some point, shrank the window back down. I was like, oh, there's like three tabs with the same link because I kept hitting the button. So
work in progress. Yeah,
they're figuring it out.
Yeah, my thoughts over there that they need more keyboard shortcuts for window management, and they need to make the on-screen controls for window management clearer than they are now. Because on the Mac, let's be honest, I'm probably never going to use Stage Manager on the Mac. I've been using the Mac for so long.
That's kind of where I am.
That it's unlikely that every time Apple introduces a new window manager, they're kind of not introducing it for me, right? They're introducing it for people. I think the reason Apple keeps trying to do window managers is because they feel like normal people get confused by window management. Normal people lose windows behind other windows and are confused about where their windows went, and so they keep trying to do ways to simplify it or whatever. That all said, I can't see using this on a regular basis. That said, I actually was impressed with it on the Mac because I feel like it's the most freeform way to do spaces that I've seen from Apple. That still keeps you aware of what all of your pairs, or app groups are, window groups are, and makes it very easy to move between them. The fact that you have these different switchable groups and you can drag things in and out, I think it's smart. I think maybe this is and I'm somebody, I know you use Spaces, but I'm somebody who's never used Spaces because out of sight, out of mind, and also because it's so complicated to rip something down from a space and put it in another space and all of that. Whereas with Stage Manager, everything's just in the little stages or whatever they are. And if you want to pull something out and drop it where you are, you do it. And then you want to make it go away, you send it away. And that, I think, has a lot of potential for being a... not necessarily like ephemeral window manager, but a little bit like that, where it's like, well, right at this moment, I need these two things, and so I'll put them up. And then I've also got these three things, and I can switch between them, but I can see them at all times, and I can move them around and do what I want. Like So I actually reacted much less negatively to it on the Mac than I thought I would. On the iPad, it feels, because the iPad has no other windowing infrastructure, they are not just using Center Stage, or sorry, there it goes, Center Stage Manager. they're not just using Stage Manager. They're trying to build a windowing metaphor and windowing controls around it. On the Mac, they're just using everything that's already on the Mac, and I think it works there. And on the iPad, it's like, you know, they have more work to do in terms of moving.
They didn't, the foundation things around. There.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I think, the fact that you try to grab a Safari tab in Safari in Stage Manager on the iPad, and Safari and Stage Manager are like, I don't know what that is, but I'm not doing anything with it. It's like, well, I'm trying to spawn a new, to pull a tab out and make it its own window, and the iPad's like, nope, not going to do it. Like, this is a thing you can do. Why are you not doing this? And the answer is, it's early. It's beta 1.
The most fascinating, and this is clearly a design choice they have made at this point, and I am fascinated by it on the iPad especially, is the idea of Stage Manager as a mode.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's a thing you can toggle on and off. Uh-huh. Boy, that says a lot to me. I mean, first of all, it says, we realize this is different.
Well, let's hide it. Let's hide it from the regular people who don't want this weird feature.
Let's not run into a situation
don't break
where
the iPad.
Will accidentally do that.
Right.
And I think that's really interesting because it suggests to me that they also think like, well, this is a work in progress and at some point it might be the de facto multitasking interface, but right now we're not doing that. Right now we're saying this is kind of a pro mode, for lack of a better word, where people can activate this if they want some extra ability to do this. And it's telling, too, that in the foo-farah over which devices can run this, they've described this as a full experience that includes the external display support, right?
Right.
Like, which also lends credence to the idea of, like, this is all a mode, right? This is all a way that you're going to use things, but we don't expect everyone to use it, and we don't even expect people who do use it to use it all the time, which is just interesting. It's usually Apple is very aggressive about, let's do a new thing. It's the right way to do things. Let's get rid of all the old stuff. And like, this is better. And right now, I think they're hedging a bit more, which is unlike them. But I think it's a smart move because of all the reasons we just described.
I think fundamentally, I mean, it may be that users toggle between these things, but I think fundamentally, this is their way of saying, we know that most iPad users maybe are not interested in a feature like this. And so we're just going to not give it to them, right? Like, why is my iPad so, like, people already react this way to multitasking, right? Where you could remember you could turn multitasking off, and it was like, you would get in it accidentally and you'd be like, why is there a slide over app? I don't want it. How do I get rid of it? I don't know how I got here.
For my mom once or twice where she's like, how do I not have this?
Yeah, right. Yeah, because it's very perplexing. So having this thing just be off and you have to turn it on means that there's sort of the simple familiar iPad mode there. And then if you want to make trouble, then you can make trouble.
Right. It goes to the root of why Apple felt the iPad was a valuable product in, you know, contrast to the Mac, you know, so many years ago when they introduced it, right? Like, the idea of, let's build something up that gets rid of some of the preconceived notions or the baggage that came with the Mac and try to get down, sort of boil it down to the simplest elements. And a lot of people did respond to that idea, right? Like, that it is so much simpler and easier to use. But there was always a percentage of people who chomped at the bit a bit to saying, like, I want to do more. And so, again, like you're saying, it's an opportunity for people who feel like, I want to take this hardware and push it and do more and, like, do more work with it and do more stuff with it, to have that ability without compromising the sort of more simple and elegant solution I think that Apple set out to make in the first place with the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird stuff.
It is weird. And some of it is just getting used to it because, again, after all these years, after a decade of using, plus of using the iPad, and being accustomed to all its little foibles, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, you can have overlapping windows, and you're like, but hold on. This is weird. Like, I had experience for the first time. Like, I've always been very happy with my 11-inch iPad. Previously, I had 10.5. I've always had sort of that medium size, you know, sort of the standard quote-unquote size. And switching to Stage Manager for the first time, I was like, it's kind of small.
Kind of small.
Mm-hmm. Like, for the window layouts and stuff they have, it is a little awkward. I'm curious, and I know there's a option to scale the display, which I haven't tried yet because it requires restarting your iPad, and I'm lazy. but I'm interested to see if that helps a bit. And also if that just pushes more people who do use these Pro features towards, you know, the 12.9 or even possibly rumors of a larger iPad.
A larger, yeah. 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 I think so. I think so. But it needs to... I think the real question is how much is it going to progress this summer?
Mm-hmm.
And how usable will it be when they ship it in the fall? And will they keep iterating even after they ship it in the fall? Because it feels to me like they've got a lot of work to do. And maybe they know it. And I think they do know it probably, right? That this is what they had to release for the developer beta to get it out there and to get the developers sort of seeing how their apps react to being in Windows and stuff. But it doesn't. Sure. It doesn't feel done. It feels like there are...
No, I
like,
agree.
The fact that there are no keyboard shortcuts to control anything. Because I had those moments where I'm like, why am I reacting this way to this iPad windowing thing? And I think a lot of it comes down to, like I said, the niceties of window management on the Mac that just Stage Manager inherits on the Mac don't exist on the iPad. And so they need to build them. And the little three-dot button, like, the little three-dot button is hard to hit. You try to hit it and you almost immediately it moves off to like resizing mode, and I it's not good. Like it needs to be actual. I think they need to actually extend that and have it be if they're not going to make it visible, which is what I think they should do, is I think they should have those controls visible. If they're not going to be visible, then I think they need to make that widget more magnetic for the pointer. And maybe even have it auto pop open when you put your pointer on it. Because to have to hit it precisely and click and then click an item, and I think not all the items that are in there make sense either. There's this idea of like, can I close a window? Like that's the number one thing that's missing is Command W does not get rid of the thing that you're looking at, and it should. It should be like, get this out of here. And there's no get this out of here. There's sort of like, send it to the side, which is not get it. That's the like muscle memory of the Mac, because they've had all these years to do window management, and the iPad's like, it just doesn't have any of it.
Right. And there's a split the difference issue in there, too, a little bit with the cognitive side of it, because it's not just about mechanically being able to interact with those buttons, but like going into this for the first time, again, if you're used to an iPad way of doing things, you've trained your brain to not think about things as like windows, right? Like they're like, it's only last year, right, that they added this idea of multiple windows per app. It used to be an app was open. That's it, right? Yeah. That's the app. And so having to already like sort of retrain your brain a little bit to like, okay, I can have multiple windows open in iPad and you can have the little shelf and whatever. And now you're at the point where it's like, okay, now I have to think. I'm trying to like move my Mac command habits onto Windows and it's still, or into iPad and like in terms of Windows, and trying to like remap my brain a little bit to treat it more like, well, I can just close a window and then open a new window, as opposed to quitting an app. Right, closing a window was quitting an app for a long time on the iPad. So it is definitely requiring a little bit of like transplanting your Mac window experience. But then it's not, as you said, it's not there, right? Not all the things that you're used to. Yeah. So it doesn't map cleanly.
Right. It's okay, I think. I mean, it's going to be frustrating for people, but it doesn't have to be the Mac.
No.
But the Mac has had so long to come up with so many different ways to manage Windows, because it started as a window management thing. And then when multitasking came into the Mac, then there were even more windows. But you could have multiple windows day one in a specific app. And the iPad just hasn't had it. Other than like you said, last year where you could have these stray windows that were someplace that you're like, where is it? It's like it's somewhere else. You tap on the icon of the app and then you see that there's more than one window and you'd be like, oh, that's where that went. I sent Safari tabs and stuff to weird places. I'm like, where is it? It's like, it's somewhere else. How do I bring it back? You don't.
I struggle with that sometimes.
Yeah, right? So this is there's very little track record. So I think that's probably at the root of why when I looked at it on the Mac, I did not think this is a bastardization of the Mac I love. How dare they? In fact, I thought, oh, this is okay. I can see the benefit. As somebody who is not a big fan of most of the window management things that Apple has tried in the last decade and a half, right? Like Spaces, which I don't use. I do like Expose because it's just, where's my stuff, right? This and the other stuff they've imported, like the app launcher and all that. Like this one actually doesn't seem half-baked to me. I actually am kind of open to the idea of this because it seems to lean into the idea that you're arbitrarily collecting windows together and then having window sets that you switch. It feels, honestly, it feels kind of like a third-party utility more than it does a system preference,
well,
right?
Because it's is a different
collector windows.
It's a different style again. Like the thing I kept wrestling with a little bit in the early days of using the iPad Stage Manager was on the Mac, you're always accustomed to having your desktop there in the background, right? And so on the iPad, I should be trying to tap behind the windows to like bring up the home screen because in my brain, I was like, oh, I want to go past the windows.
I think they should do that. I think that's a mistake that you can't.
It took
tap
me a long time to figure out how to get to,
the home screen
because I was like swiping up and getting like the overview, and I was like, no, that's not what I want. And I remembered, okay, it's a different swipe up gesture. I was like, all right,
yeah.
You're not quite there yet. You need to play around with this because there's this idea too. I felt for a little bit, I was like, maybe I can't get back to the home screen this mode. That would be weird. But I guess there's no like files I need to drag off the desktop or anything. So I guess that kind of works, but it feels weird.
It does. It's strange. And yeah, they're still working on it. It's a work in progress.
And it's exciting. I like the idea that they're pushing the envelope on this, that they're really trying to find a solution that is not either, hey, what we already had was great and we don't need to mess with it anymore, or B, let's just staple the Mac, you know, windowing management system on top of this. Neither of those were good options. They had to come up with something new. And I think the fact that this is, you know, showing that it's in the early stages and hopefully they'll continue tweaking it is a positive, because it means we're really thinking about how the best way to do this on an iPad is.
Yeah. It's exciting because it's Apple. Like, I love this. I love to see Apple iterate on fundamental kind of user interface stuff in a new way. This is actually one of the things that I've enjoyed about watching the iPad grow and change over the last decade. Is it is like the pointer support that they put in. It's so good, and it's not like the Mac, but it's informed by the Mac. But it's like, well, how would we implement this in a way that fits the iPad? And this is like that too, where it's not as fully realized as the pointer was when it was released, because it was released as a surprise, as a final, and not as a bunch of betas. So I hope we get to that point with this, that when this ships, we're like, oh yeah, okay, you can make this work. And it's just not quite there, but it's okay. It's early. This feels like one of those things that's going to change. You mentioned the kerfuffle about compatibility for this mode, and I am, where people are complaining basically like, why don't older iPads support this? While I am always sympathetic to people who want their older products to use the whizzy new features, I'm not that sympathetic. Sorry to be a curmudgeon here, but like, wasn't it last year that everybody was complaining that the M1 iPad Pro didn't take advantage of the M1 processor, and now Apple has released a feature that requires the M1 processor, and everybody's complaining that it doesn't support older processors? Like, come on.
Well, and you know, I think you and Mike talked about this a bit on Upgrade, and I think you kind of put the nail on it, which is you got to draw the line somewhere. And they decided the experience on the A12Z was just not up to par. It wasn't capable.
People who are picking through, like, for aha, but this is not the case. I mean, well, I think the fundamentals...
Of course it worked on it. Didn't work well enough.
I think the fundamentals is that they probably were shooting for M1 to begin with. And I don't think... The implied with a lot of it, too, is like there's a conspiracy here. That Apple's just trying to make things as obsolete as possible, so you'll have to buy new hardware. And I don't think that's the reason that they're doing it. And I also think that, you know, expecting new features for your old hardware is something you shouldn't do. I'm sympathetic to people who are like, oh man, I just bought this iPad 2 years ago and now I got to buy another one if I want this feature. Like, your iPad's still fine. It just doesn't have this feature. If Apple made a mistake here, I think, and I don't know what's going on the inside. My understanding is that, okay, how shall I put this? I think if Apple made a mistake here, it's that they tried to do this too cleanly, and it made it weird, and that they might have been better off having it be complicated and straightforward. And there are two examples here, which is, I'm not sure, I have heard that the low-end iPad Air that does not have as much RAM is not as good at this as the rest of them. And yet it's compatible because it's an M1. Right, because Apple was like, well, yeah, and they don't do virtual memory on it. So Apple was like, no, it's just easier to say everything with an M1 does it. right? Even though they maybe could have said that low-end iPad Air, and they're like, well, I don't know. I don't think we can bar that low-end iPad Air, so we're going to make it work, even if it isn't that great, and even if we might have to limit some of what it can do in certain circumstances in order for it to work. We can't not have it be in there because it's an M1, which they could have, but they chose not to do that. On the other side of it, you've got that previous generation iPad Pro that had the A12Z processor in it. And the high-end model of that had a lot of RAM in it. Not the low-end models, but the high-end models. And I feel like that's another case where, I don't know, maybe they tried it out and it was just not good enough. I kind of have a hard time believing that it's so fundamentally different that the low-end iPad Air can run it and the high-end iPad Pro A12Z cannot. And that's what we don't know. Maybe there's something very specific about the M1 that they chose to leverage to build this feature, and it's just not there on previous processors. But my gut feeling is that they probably didn't want to say on 1 terabyte configurations of the previous iPad Pro, you can also use this feature. Or they looked at the amount of work that would be required to do a one-off just for that hardware, and we're like, it's just not worth it for us. And that's
the number of models, and how many people own that, and et cetera.
And my big complaint about this, and again, I am sympathetic to people's feelings about being left out, but my big complaint about it is so many people have taken this ridiculous argument that just because macOS on the developer test kit ran on the A12Z, that therefore there's plenty of enough power to do windowing on an iPad. It's like, iPadOS is not macOS. They're not the same. They're not the same. And however they've built this windowing system on iPadOS, to use macOS as proof, quote unquote proof. There are a lot of people out there. I think it was Federico said this, where it's like, people are like, I know for a fact that they could do this. And it's like, oh, what team at Apple do you work on? Because you don't know for a fact unless you're at Apple. And if you're at Apple and you're like, I know for a fact this works fine and it's all conspiracy, well, I mean, step forward, I guess. But to me, like, yeah, it sucks that some hardware got left out. And I think that Apple maybe is guilty of not pushing it hard enough and certainly not explaining themselves clearly enough. But at the same time, weren't we all just here saying why are they not taking advantage of the power of the M1? And they made an M1 only feature and now everybody's mad.
Yeah.
Come on.
It is. I mean, no matter how you slice it, somebody was going to be frustrated.
Sure.
I feel like, because either you don't get the feature and you're bummed, or you get the feature
and it's bad,
and then you're
like, you can only do 3 windows and then it can't do anymore, and you can't do external display, right?
I think the line has to be drawn somewhere, and I think in the absence of having Apple explain sort of in a detailed fashion why that's the case, and let's also be clear that the people getting upset about this is within a small community of, this isn't like, average people don't know anything about this, right? They don't even know the feature exists yet. So the people getting upset about this are already a small percentage. And you don't know Apple's motives. So, you know, attributing it to malice seems like a jump to me, but I understand. Again, I do understand people's frustration. I mean, and this year, I think there was some talk too of some of the system requirements for the new OSs are knocking off a bunch of older devices, which happens every once in a while, right? Apple will go through several years of keeping, or at least in the past has done several years of keeping stuff compatible. But sooner or later, again, stuff has to fall off because you don't want to support older screen sizes or older hardware or assume that there is no biometric sensor or whatever, right? Like, it just gets more and more annoying to get to a point where you have to be like, all right, we have to have all our, not only us, but all our developers have to code around exceptions for hardware that doesn't meet sort of the state of the art. And I know, for example, like my iMac, I think is the last, it's the oldest one that can upgrade to Ventura, I believe, because it's a 2017. And even there, I'm not sure because a lot of the stuff seemed to be Macs that had either Apple Silicon or Apple Silicon, like the coprocessors, like T2 and stuff. And I think this one predates that, but I guess it still makes it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Apple has, in some ways, Apple has spoiled us in terms of how aggressive it is at keeping things compatible, to the point where people then get kind of upset when there are compatibility losses. But it I think Apple does better than anybody else
yep.
at this. And sure do. They do need to move forward. And I think it's a good example, too, where, like, if there's a feature that's enabled by the new technology, I mean, get ready for it, right? Because the time is coming when the Intel processors aren't going to get supported anymore. That's going to happen.
Sure.
Oh, and yeah. And people are going to be mad about that, too. And it's like, that. It's all going to happen because Apple wants to build stuff, especially they want to build stuff for Apple Silicon, which covers all their platforms currently, right? And so Intel Macs missing out on some of that stuff, it's just going to happen because that's not how Apple is conceiving of features going forward. But, you know, I get it. I mean, again, yeah, you're right. There's a lot of stuff that is from a very particular community, and they're looking at this in a very particular way. And while I sympathize with people who have hardware that doesn't get supported and they feel like they just bought it and therefore it should be supported, that's life. Like, that's technology for you. This is what happens, is you buy stuff and then you have it for a little while and then the whizzy new feature doesn't work with it. And I'll just, you know, there are places where it's a lot worse, but this is what happens in technology, and not every feature is built for you. And the M1 is such a kind of a milestone product in some ways, that is it surprising yeah, right. that Apple chose to simplify it on that point? Like, and again, if there are high-end configurations of the iPad Pro that it works on and they want to go back a little bit further and expand compatibility, then go ahead, and I hope they do that. But I think that whatever they do there, it probably won't satisfy anybody, because it'll probably be really limited. Because in the end, what we're talking about is systems that were not previously built to have multiple visible windows running at once. And you can fake, without swap, you can fake it using split view.
Right,
and,
sure.
And slide over, because you can kill that process, and then when you change, you bring it back up. But you can't, when everything's a window on screen, you kind of can't do that. And, you know, that older hardware, while it is powerful, was not necessarily built for the level of memory required and swapping to disk required to make this feature work. And I mean, yeah, imagine if they went back a couple generations with the iPad Pro, but a bunch of windows just became blanks
right,
when you were using it. And then when you clicked on it, other windows became blanks. Like, that would be terrible. Yeah. But that might be what was required. And it may be that was just a fundamental for Apple. Like, no, if that happens, it's out. Like, we're not going to have that be this kind of weird peekaboo experience where some windows are running and some windows are not. That's not acceptable.
I have to say, I'm looking at the iOS 16 list, and you can see the writing's on the wall, right? It's the iPhone 8 and 8 Plus and the second generation SE are the only non, quote unquote, modern iPhones, right?
Yeah.
That are supported. So, you know, doesn't surprise me, because those phones have been around for several years now.
Yeah.
You know, since the iPhone 10. And I think the answer is, like, okay, the iPhone 8 is like the last one that came out, I want to say, like, simultaneously. It came out, I think, at the same time as the 10.
Yeah.
So that's basically the cutoff line. And sooner or later, it's none of those.
It comes for all of us. The incompatibility bar comes for all of us eventually.
The iPhone means now a specific thing, right? It's got a look, it's got a feel to it, it's got design conventions that are a part of it. And Apple wants to push the envelope again and get to a point where it's like, well, that is what the iPhone means. We want to be able to assume that every iPhone has, you know, the edge-to-edge screen and Face ID and all this stuff, because that's where we're going with this.
Yeah.
Progress marches forward.
Today, people can rush out and order. Oh, again, don't rush out. Stay at home and order the 13-inch also M2 MacBook Pro.
Possibly don't order.
It's available now. I wrote a piece at Macworld this week about it. I had somebody, I had a few people, I think because they wrote the headline to be positive, say, like, oh, well, here's my, there was another Macworld writer who said, oh, here's my counterpoint to Jason's point. And I'm like, I don't think it's a counterpoint. Like, his story was why you shouldn't buy this. And I'm like, my story is basically like me trying to find a reason why this product exists.
Right.
And I don't know, I would say failing for the most part. I know this has been fodder for a lot of podcasts since last week, and we'll see. I think the most exciting thing about this product, which is coming out next week, next Friday, mm-hmm. I think, is the M2, right? That's the debut of the M2, and one of the performance characteristics of the
isn't
M2.
That fascinating that the M2 is debuting on a model that is kind of old, right? Like, I mean, it's not, they're not like exactly putting their best foot forward.
It's like a 6-year-old design.
Right. And it's just weird, right? And I think this, it feels very much like a corner Apple's been backed into, which is,
well, I mean, they wanted to ship this with the Air. Yeah. And so they did, but the Air's not ready. So they're going to ship this thing.
Exactly.
Then again, I could argue from a purely, and I don't think this was the plan, but like from a pure kind of coverage standpoint thing, as I'm thinking about how am I going to cover this thing? And I like the advantage of the M2 making its debut in this laptop is that the reviews are going to be more about the M2 than they're going to be about the laptop.
Sure.
Because there's nothing to say about the laptop.
No, it's the same as last year's. It's the same as the year before that. You know,
it's the same enclosure going back to like 2016, 2017.
Right. But even with the M1 version was what, 2 years old? Not quite 2 years old, I guess. And it's almost identical to that. Almost, other than the chip.
Yeah, it's the same. It's literally physically the same. You couldn't tell the difference from the outside.
Reprint that old review with a new section on the M2.
Yeah. Oh, man. I could do that. It's sort of like what I did with the M1 Air, where I just used pieces of other reviews and put them together and said, yeah, this is just pieces from other products. So that is like, I think the bottom line, and I'm going to have to write about this at some point, right, whenever I review this thing, is I don't think anybody should buy this product. Because it represents everything about the old generation of Apple laptops. It's literally the only Apple laptop with a touch bar. It's the only Apple laptop without of like the modern generation without MagSafe, without the extended screen with the smaller bezels and the notch. Like there are so few good reasons to choose it over a different laptop, whether it's a higher end MacBook Pro or the M2 Air when it comes out. And I mean, I don't want to ascribe too much to Apple here, but I also want to attach a little bit of cynicism to them, a little bit. Maybe you could call it business savvy if you want, but I think the problem here is, I think this product's a little embarrassing, but they have to do it for business reasons. And the number one reason, which they won't talk about for obvious reasons, that this product exists is there are people and organizations who will only buy a MacBook Pro. They will only buy a MacBook Pro. They're not interested in consumer laptops like the MacBook Air. And you're like, well, wait a second. What's the logic in that? Do you think the M2 MacBook Air is somehow lesser than the M2 MacBook Pro in terms of the hardware? No. It's not, but one of them is called MacBook Pro, and it gives Apple the chance to say MacBook Pro starts at this low price and then immediately leaps up to modern computers that start at $1,999, but we have this other one there. I think it's all psychology and also checkbox, you know, marking, where there are companies that only buy MacBook Pros for their employees, and then look what you got. You got a MacBook Pro. It's brand new. Yay. Oh, it's this one. Okay. And so that's why this product exists. I don't want to hate on this product too much, but it's dumb. So I'm sorry. I'm going to do it a little bit. It's dumb. It is a vestige of the old way that is here because if Apple made one that was better, it would cost more and they don't want it to cost more. So you get this thing and we'll see. I'll put it through its paces and I'll write a review at some point and that's fine. But like, And then the M2 Air will come out. But it's like, I have a hard time imagining that anybody should buy this instead of the M2 Air. Anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. It does. It seems like an old.
It's an old computer. You know, it's got a touch bar and no MagSafe. And it does have the longest. I will say this for it. Here's me being nice. It appears to have the longest battery life of any available Mac laptop. Because the 14 and the 16 don't have the battery life rating as this 13. It has more battery than the Air. So if you want the longest battery life laptop in Apple's line, you could get this. And it has a fan, so it's gonna be better at extended, mostly GPU operations than the M2 Air, because it's gonna have to throttle somewhat. But still, Like, mm-hmm. for most mm-hmm. people, you should either wait for the Air, or if you've got the money to upgrade to the 14, you should get the 14 because it's a modern
Apple
laptop.
I wrote my piece this week for Macworld coming out on Monday, talking about the M2 and the roadmap based on, this is my pitch is, hey, now we've got two data points, which makes a line. So now we can like extrapolate past that, which is a thing any good journalist can do with two data points.
That's right.
And I'm fascinated to see how this goes because there's some play in here. You know, they're going to get better at making these chips. But if you work on sort of based on when Apple products tend to come out and how long it took them to go for various things in the M1. I think the most interesting thing to me is, one, the M1 Air still being in the lineup, which is there, I think, as we've all discussed, to hold down a price point. It's got that $999 price. They couldn't get the MacBook Air, the new one, down to that. I assume it will get there eventually, or there'll be something under it.
I assume so, but it's the same deal, right? It's like
the same deal.
The new Air couldn't reach $999, so they kept the old one around.
And the same way that we, in the past, Apple has kept different generations of Intel chips around, I think the M1, you know, obviously the M1 still exists in the studio and all the other stuff. So we're going to have the M2 and the M1 are simultaneous.
Yeah.
But what's interesting to me is this. Apple said when they announced, you know, the transition, we're going to do this transition in 2 years. And then in the spring, when they brought out new products, including the studio, they said the only thing left to do is the Mac Pro. We all kind of expected it might get teased at WWDC. It didn't. But if they're going to hit that 2 year mark, not to say they couldn't change it, but I think they'd really like to, and they've probably been planning on it. Mm-hmm. It suggests the Mac Pro has to at least be announced by the end of the year. By the end of the year, they're not going to be ready to put an M2 Ultra in anything. That chip cannot be that far along, right? They just put out the M2. Those aren't even shipping at all until July, much less in scale, probably.
Well, next week. Shipping next week.
Sorry, shipping next week. But then by the time the Air comes out and like other products presumably make the transition, and then we talk about, well, does the M2 and the M Pro Max, you know, those come out earlier probably than the Ultra. Because again, the M2 Ultra is the highest end chip. Presumably it will take the longest to make. Which suggests to me that if a Mac Pro comes out this year, long story short, it still runs an M1 Ultra. Or, I guess, multiple M1 Ultras.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think seems likely that it's just that with either a higher core count or a more than one in the same box. But it's interesting because they're going to be still releasing M1 products, presumably, or at least product, even after the M2 comes out. And I don't know if some of that is, you know, a lot of that is supply chain or just, you know, getting sort of stuck in terms of production yields and what have you. But it is interesting.
Do you think release M1 products?
I mean, the M1 Ultra specifically. I think if the Mac Pro comes out by the end of the year, I think it has to have an M1 Ultra in it. They already said that's the last chip, and they're not ready to do an M2 Ultra, is my guess.
Yeah, I think it'll be an M2.
You think it will be a straight M2?
M2 Ultra.
You think they can ship that by the end of the year when they've only shipped two M2? I mean, not even shipped two M2 products.
Well, I think
I find myself skeptical.
I agree, but I think the question is the supply chain. It sounds like they wanted the M2 to come out early this year or late last year, and so the question is the M2 development actually further along, but they can't ship the computers yet, and would that allow them to announce a Mac Pro toward the end of the year? Thinking that that's a product that they can announce and not ship. But you're right, because it would mean that they need to, by the end of the year, presumably turn over all their other products to M2 and M2, you know, Max and Ultra and Pro and all of those, and do a laptop refresh and all of that. And are they going to be capable of doing that?
A hell of a fall if that were the case, but I find myself skeptical based on the constraints they seem to be dealing with right now that they can do that. And it also makes me wonder if the Mac Pro was supposed to come out earlier or maybe commensurate with the new Air or something, and that got pushed back as well. And so it was originally intended to have an M1 Ultra because it was going to come out not long after the studio. But that's kind of my theory. I find myself not sure that they're going to be ready to move everything else to M2. I'm happy to be proven wrong, but it is clearly a tough time out there for producing all this stuff at scale. And I feel like, it's the same reason we talked a bit about the missing mid-range desktop Mac, right? I think I think Apple prioritized and said, we sell way more laptops than desktops. Yeah. If we can make only X number of M1 Pros and M1 Maxes, they're going into MacBook Pros because we can sell those. You know, or they will sell in much higher quantities than, sure, say, an M1 Pro iMac.
iMac, yeah. Which I still think is coming.
I think it's coming.
That's, it feels to me like that's a thing that's going to have to happen, is the Mac Mini and the iMac are going to get that. We will get a desktop that is not the Mac Studio, right? That has something
better than an M1.
Right.
Or an M2, I guess.
Right.
Yeah,
something that's just a step up from that. But
yep. Again, in a different world where they weren't dealing with the kind of economic constraints they've got, I think this would potentially look a bit different. But, you know, they're having to sort of choose what they feel like they can do right now. And I mean, as someone who's in the market for a desktop that is better than an M1/M2, I've been waiting for something like that, and it feels like, I don't know when we might see that. It could be fall, it could be spring. Honestly, I feel like it'd go either way at this point.
All right, well, next week we'll be living in a world where the M2 is shipping.
That's right.
How about that?
I was going to mention, Jason, before we
go, yes.
You were very nice enough last, when we were in at WFC and hanging out, you let me play with your Playdate.
Yeah, it's true.
And I just wanted to add that I now have my own.
Oh, congratulations.
My own little Playdate. So you can hear the excitement.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. It's good.
Volume
there. I love that little thing. I'm really just challenged to find time to play it, especially with all the games flowing in. It's like I'm now overwhelmed with games.
I'm the opposite problem. I've only got two, and
these are fine, but I could move.
Yeah,
this is my thing. Is that I think they should start. They should have started with like four. I know Mike and I talked about this, but like I think they should have started with more on it. That starting with two and then doing 2 a week is a mistake, and they should have started with four.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm actually feeling now like maybe it's overwhelming, and they should have done. Originally, I think they're doing twice as many as they originally planned. They were going to drop one a week, and they're dropping 2 a week. But like, I find it overwhelming. I think it's great, overwhelming in a good way. But like, there are games that I have not opened yet because I just have not had the time to explore more games. It's like, but I'm just getting into this other game, and now there are more games, and it's a whole thing. So, but I'm looking forward to it. I think it's a good problem to have, right? Like, it is.
Sure.
I now have no doubt that the Playdate is a good buy because the software that's been developed for it so far that I've seen, there's just a lot of good games for it. And like, that is actually asking a lot of any game device, is like, are there going to be good games for it? And the answer is, yeah, they've got some adventure games, they've got some casual games, there's a lot of good games for it. So it is there. I have a few favorites, but like, it is it's full of good games. There's like, I don't have enough time to play all the games that I want to play on the Playdate. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good endorsement on my part. So
yeah,
there it
is. I'm looking forward to trying it more, and I know there are some games I can sideload on it.
Sure,
so
there's a good Tetris out there, and with Whitewater Wipeout, you can get the hang of it. It's kind of fun.
I have just started to get the hang out of it after playing around with it, and like I played it briefly on your Playdate the other week, and I was like, this is frustrating, but I feel like if I sit down for a while, I can probably figure it out. And I think I've now started to get it.
The surfboard pointed in the right direction,
and then
you can start to do little up and downs, and then you start to do flips, and it's a whole, like, you
it's
get
whole
there
thing.
Eventually.
It's a whole thing. So yeah, excited for that.
All right. Well, we'll be back in M2 land next week, right? We'll be in the M2 era at last
next
week.
That's right.
Until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.